It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I thank each and every one of you for listening. This show, we go to work, we want to try to help you get your brain around the issues out there so that you can converse with your friends and your family and your colleagues in this battle of ideas that is raging in our country right now. And the first thing that we can do is start to change hearts and minds, and it's through persuasion. And that is why we want to help you get your brain around these issues. So thank you so much for joining us. You each have a purpose today. Live with intention, strive for excellence, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Producer Steve, it is a Monday, and as we look at this packet that Patty has put together for us, we've got a lot of work to do this week.
Well, mercy sakes, I'm overwhelmed. Hey, but, you know, to your point that you just made, obviously, Rush Limbaugh is no longer with us, but on his Daily Show now, they'll run a caller who was, comes to him on a phone call, basically making a confession about being, one time I was a liberal, but, and they'll lay their story out there as to why they're no longer a liberal. And it comes down to the fact that they listened to him or they listened to somebody else, and they got into that engaging discussion, and they actually started to think about things in the long term, and the perspective was changed. So what you just said, yeah, we got work to do.
We do have work to do, and the radical activist left that has taken over the Democrat Party, they have been active for over a century in the assault on the American idea. And as we go through the packet here, we realize that there is just the nuances of language. And one of the things I really recommend is that we no longer refer to the Democrat Party as Democratic. There's really nothing Democratic about it. Of course, a Democratic Republic is basically 51% rules. We're a constitutional republic, so that the minority also has representation. So it was brilliant the way America was founded in the founding documents. But democratic, in essence, could be it's 51% rules. But there's nothing democratic about the elites that are running the Democrat Party now, because not even 51% of the Democrat Party is running it. It is just a small group. And for example, Steve, Kamala Harris, who now is one of the most powerful women in the world, she couldn't even get enough votes in the Democrat primary to move on to the presidency. And here she is, one
down the hall,
basically from the presidency. And so there's nothing democratic about the Democrat Party now, and it's very important that we engage in this battle of language and no longer refer to it as democratic, because there's nothing democratic about it. And democratic seems to have a lot of people have a very favorable view of that word, but Democrat is totally different. And I think it's a really important distinction, Steve.
It is, and basically, as the opening said today, all this stuff is not being assessed properly, it's not being thought out properly, and it is getting us into trouble.
It is getting us into trouble, for sure. So, and just very quickly, another kind of war on language, and that is something historic happened, and a federal judge struck down the ban on AR rifles in California, and they have been called assault rifles, AR rifles. They're not assault rifles, but once again, the left named them that, and then that has a very negative connotation, an aggressive connotation, when in essence, these AR rifles are very common for both home defense and also for, you know, many people have them. And again, that's another kind of war on language, Steve.
Yeah. And again, it just readdresses the same point about being enlightened enough to be able to make these distinctions and don't let the major media and any other culprits out there lead you around by the nose.
And if they are not telling you the truth over here, you have to question then the other things that they say as well. And again, that is one of the reasons why we do this show, is to help you get through these things. I do want to say thank you to this team I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Let's go ahead and jump into a couple of other things here. First of all, the Avs, they are in a 2-2 tie right now. Game 5, I think, is tomorrow in the playoffs. And a great place to watch the games is Hooters Restaurants. They have all kinds of specials. You can go to my website to find all those specials. Just click on the Sponsors tab. And then when Hooters comes up, you just click on that, and it'll have all their specials. But they have to-go specials, dine-in. I love their smoked wings. They're half the calories. And actually, the girls are going to be coming over on Wednesday, so I'm going to get some of the smoked wings, I think, this week. But they do have specials, and that is you buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free on Wednesdays. And they have all kinds of different specials, lunch specials, kids eat free on Saturdays, so all kinds of things. Be sure and check that out. And we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. Socialism is not about free stuff. The free stuff is the carrot to get people to vote for that. But ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights or their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. If something is a good idea, you should not need force to implement it.
Can I give you a good visualization there?
Sure.
The meme showed the entire Western Hemisphere. So here's North America, Central America, South America. And it just asks the question, if socialism is so great, why are the people from Central America headed north? Venezuela is south.
Good point. I don't know of any other country where people are storming their borders. Do you? Soviet Union? Russia? China, I don't know any other countries where people are storming the borders trying to get into a country. Do you?
Well, I mean, let's cut to the chase. The welcome mat is out right now. It wasn't 6 months ago, but it is now.
But people were still trying to get to America, even when we had good border policies. But now with this carrot of all this free stuff, and I'm pretty astonished as I've seen these pictures of people coming across the Rio Grande. I saw one last week that I found it really astounding that they had, some of them had on face masks, and their clothes looked pretty good for a long trek. And many of them have cell phones, and it's kind of like, where did you get that face mask as you were coming across the Rio Grande? I mean,
matching backpacks,
weird.
Too. Don't forget the matching backpacks. Yes.
Biden T-shirts. where are they getting all this? Who's paying for that? It's a big question to ask. But I found a new person to quote today, Steve, and that was Hesiod. And he was an ancient Greek poet generally thought to have been active between 750 and 650 BC, around the same time as Homer. He is generally regarded as the first written poet in the Western tradition to regard himself as an individual persona with an active role to play in his subject. Ancient authors credited Hesiod and Homer with establishing Greek religious customs. Modern scholars refer to him as a major source on Greek mythology, farming techniques, early economic thought, archaic Greek astronomy, and ancient timekeeping. And I was looking for work quotes, and this is what he said. Do not put your work off till tomorrow and the day after. For a sluggish worker does not fill his barn, nor one who puts off his work. Industry makes work go well, but a man who puts off work is always at hand grips with ruin. And I was thinking of all of the unemployment that's going on in America. A lot of it, much of it, because of public policy. But I thought, here this guy was 750-650 BC. I mean, it's so appropriate now, but with all this free money and the spending, we are putting ourselves in a very, very difficult situation as a country, Steve.
Well, I'm seeing, and don't ask me which ones because I don't have that kind of retention. Certain states are basically getting more and more hesitant to hand out this money in terms of for the unemployment assistance.
Well, I wish that people would say no. When I was on city council and we were looking at the money for the Southeast Light Rail extension, and the cost for that was coming in around $207 million. But when I looked at, when RTD was presenting the different contracts, it was adding up to around $250 million. But 90, regardless of that, and I could never get the straight answer on actually what the cost was really going to be. But 90, I think either $92 or $96 million of that was coming from the federal government. And I voted against it because I don't think that it is right that we take federal money for things that we want to do here in our own communities. If we want to do that, then we vote. We vote that we decide that we want to pay the taxes to do that. And then when that happens, many times the answer is no. But when you're spending somebody else's money, it's a lot easier. So I voted no on that. And I had people say to me, Kim, if we don't take the money, somebody else will. Well, that is a recipe for putting our country into ruin, Steve.
Well, I'm fresh on reading a very intelligently written document or perspective on our debt of $27 trillion. I can't figure the exact figure.
It's astounding.
But that very thought, well, if we don't take it, somebody else will. That mentality has got to stop.
Well, yeah. But we've got to elect people that will say no. But so many voters, and you talk about it all the time, is vote buying, that they come in and they say that we will give you X, and they buy votes that way. And so it's not just the people that we elect. We have to talk about the character of our own country. And when we talk about government as local, we have to start at the very local level, and that is with ourselves. And that is this idea of getting something for nothing that just doesn't work. But let's go to break. In the third and fourth segment, we're going to be talking with Heather Zumarraga, and she is an expert, a nationally known expert on economy, a variety of things. I want to talk to her about the jobs number that just came out, inflation. When we come back, though, we've got to talk about this bill of the day. It's a funding public schools formula, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Our bill of the day is House Bill 21-1325. It is a funding public schools formula. It does have a bipartisan support on this. And it says the bill establishes an interim committee on school finance for the 2021-2022 legislative interims. And this committee is made up of four senators and four representatives with equal party representation and may convene subcommittees that include people with technical expertise in school finance. The committee must consider the following. And you go through that. It's basically how to create, I would say, equity, and that's in air quotes, throughout the districts regarding funding. So these districts, at least the way I read this, Steve, the districts that have actually voted to have, it's called an MLO, mill levy overrides, that this would try to equalize that funding throughout the state. So your taxes aren't going to go down. And in fact, I'm going to bet that we'll see additional mill levy overrides on this. But so let's say a district, people have moved into a district because they thought it was a good school district, and they have voted for mill levy overrides, MLOs, because they want to get more funding into their schools. And now it looks like that there will be $90 million that will be allocated through this committee to do a study on this and try to, again, equalize that. When I look at what is happening in public education, and there are so many fine teachers, but when we look at the curriculum that we have, both the LGBTQ agenda that is being pushed into our schools, as well as the CRT, the critical race theory that is being pushed into our schools, you realize that that is taking time out of the school day where kids could be learning the things that they need to learn to be successes, such as reading, writing, arithmetic, being able to think critically. And that is taking time away from the school day, and our kids are falling behind. Then they use that excuse that our kids are falling behind so that they need more money. And Kevin Lundberg noted that that there is this $90 million that's being allocated. And as he mentioned, the consultants are hovering over that money because that's who's going to be paid for this. And once again, this is a way that the far left is able to fund their agenda, because this is the way they get money to people that push for their agenda. $90 million. I just was trying to do a quick calculation on this, Steve. And you would think that when you do a web search, you should be immediately can find out, when you put how many public school teachers in Colorado, you think you should be able to find that immediately. But it looks to me like it's rather old numbers. But I took the best that I could find. And this is from the National Center for Education Statistics. And it says that Colorado has 55,000 or almost 56,000 public school teachers. So let's take $90 million. I guess I took 55,000 teachers. So $90 million divided by 55,000 teachers, you could immediately give every teacher $1,636.36. Do you not think that every public school teacher would appreciate that, Steve?
Oh, no doubt in my mind. I mean, what are the three things that a public school teacher has going against them right now? The pay, obviously, what you just addressed, the antics of the teachers' union, and then what was the third thing I was just thinking of? Oh, well, the curriculum being polluted by these outside interests like the LGBTQ or the critical race thing, taking time away from science, technology, math. So they're stuck, and the whole system is stuck. But your assessment is correct. As soon as someone raises that point, they say, well, we need more money.
Right. And I do think that people would like to get more pay to our teachers. But again, $90 million, it doesn't say how it should be implemented. And you know good and well that the consultants are rubbing their hands together for that particular money. And I ask you to go back and do a web search for the Saline County, Kansas, 8th grade graduation exam. And if that is what we were teaching our kids, our kids, and you know what, that was the generation that they came out. We just acknowledged the 77th anniversary of D-Day. And those were 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old boys that were storming those beaches and then ultimately defeated Hitler and the Nazi regime. But they were equipped with the tools, the knowledge to of bigger things than just themselves. All of this stuff that we're teaching on our curriculum right now, the LGBTQ agenda, the CRT agenda, is teaching kids to be victims, that there's oppressors and those that are oppressed, instead of the bigger idea, that giving them the tools to go after their hopes and dreams. And there is a big difference. So I would recommend that you, have you had a chance to take a look at that, Steve? I can't remember if you and I talked about that after you'd taken a look at that exam or not.
No, I did not. And every time you reference this, I put that on my list of things to do, but that list is fungible.
It is fungible. Let's talk about another thing. And I have added, in taking away people's rights, this coercion. And we're seeing corporate coercion regarding this the vaccine. The government says we're not mandating. But yet, through coercion, they are, once again, using some kind of force. And over here in Mesa County, Colorado, we know, has a vaccine lottery. And bear in mind, my friends, this is not an official vaccine. This is still not been approved by the FDA. And one has to question why there is such a huge push to get Americans, quote unquote, vaccinated when this has not even been approved by the FDA. And so here we have Colorado that's offering, it's $1 million, right, for 5 weeks or five different time periods. $1 million, it's like, well, whose money is that? That's money that we're taking from hardworking people, or that's been given to us by the federal government because they are taking it from future generations. I mean, there's something so immoral about that. But where is Mesa County, Steve, coming up with $90,000 for their vaccine lottery? Once again, one has to ask the question, why would these governments be pushing something that is not even approved by the FDA yet, Steve?
Well, I'm sitting here chuckling as you're speaking, thinking, you know, gone are the days of real journalism. We all know that. But what a great opportunity for someone to go out and answer that very question. Why is the FDA missing in action on this? What's holding up their approval? I mean, you think that the Biden administration would be on them really hard and heavy to put their rubber stamp on this thing, and it still has yet to happen.
Well, and to be fair, it was under the Trump administration that they really fast-tracked these vaccines. And I know that I have to question why on that as well. And people say, they go ahead and they say that they're going to make the choice for this, but there's all kinds of coercion from family members, from businesses, again, saying whether or not you can come into their business, whether or not you've had the vaccine. I mean, I never dreamed that this would be the America that we were living in. But anyway, and then to be using taxpayers' money to have government lotteries, it's just beyond reason for me. But let's go over to one other thing here, and that is it's a bill that was just signed into law by Governor Jared Polis, which reverses a 20-year-old court precedent, which allows cities and counties to require affordable housing as part of new rental developments. Now, first of all, let's think about this. You have a rental unit, and once again, we still have the construction defects law that's in place, which really is preventing a lot of condo development. And condo development is a home ownership. It is something that you own instead of renting. So we have all these people that are being put into rental units, and they're paying rent, And somebody's getting rich off that rent, but they certainly are not creating any wealth for themselves. And we see more and more apartments, again, through public policy, are being pushed forward. But now they say that these developers have to build affordable units. Well, who's going to pay for that? And there's a couple of different ways. We've seen governments come in and subsidize these developers on this, or they're going to raise the prices on the other people there. So a young couple that's trying to get ahead, that doesn't want to live off of government subsidies, they're going to be paying higher rents for people that are paying lower rents. And the one couple might be working two jobs, might be working a lot harder, and the other one, they might not even be working at all. There is something so inherently unfair about this. But then when you get right down to it, it's not really about affordable housing. If you look in this, it says cities can impose affordable housing requirements on new or redeveloped projects so long as they give developers or property owners alternatives to build affordable units on site. For example, they could trade those for affordable units built elsewhere. So they talk about that they want to have people live near where they work, but yet they can trade this for units elsewhere. They can pay a fee into an affordable housing fund, or there's other options. So once again, you'll have government that will be picking winners and losers on that. Steve, you have a final comment on that?
Well, this place that you live and I live close by is they're striking up the band that they've got a project underway right now for that fits this description, affordable housing. My first question is, all right, let's break down each unit. What it costs the builder to put it up, and give mm-hmm. them their fair margin, and then realize that what it's going to go for is probably going to be a lot bigger number. And it's like, what is driving that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to be paying. I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention on the real local level, just because, we've been doing a lot of other things. I'm going to start paying a lot more attention to that. I did want to mention one other thing, one other headline here. And this is from Susan Adams in Forbes. And it says, legacy emissions are banned at Colorado's public colleges. And it says, what's the most unfair part of college admissions? Easy answer, the legacy preference. And legacy applicants are the relatives of alumni. Elite schools like Harvard emit a lot of them. And this is between 2010 and 2015. The legacy admit rate at Harvard was 34%. Meantime, applicants who had no family connections were admitted at a rate well below 10%. Actually, at many of these elite colleges, remember that there is admissions preferences for basically anybody who's not a straight Caucasian male. And now what you will see is that people, your big donors, they kind of think that their kids should be able to get into those schools. I think that this is going to start to be a situation where donors should start to move away from these schools that are indoctrinating our kids to hate America. But I think that you're going to start to see donors not give money to these schools. And I think that this is going to once again be work out not the way they want it to. So, but let's go to break, Steve. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Heather Zamoraga. She is an expert on the economy. She's nationally known, and she's actually written a book, and it is, let me get to it right here. It is, I'll get to it when we come back. Anyway, we're going to talk about inflation, the jobs numbers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. It is kimmunson.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcast and our most recent op-eds. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Heather Zumarraga. And she is an expert. She's a nationally known economist, a market expert, a business commentator, and author of The Man's Guide to Corporate Culture. Heather, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be here, Kim. Good morning.
Good morning. And Heather, we just had, I mean, there's a lot going on in the economy right now. But the first thing I wanted to talk with you about is the jobs numbers that just came out on Friday. They looked pretty favorable. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, they look pretty favorable in the sense that they're headed in the right direction. The economy added 559,000 jobs. So what does that mean? If you're listening, that was below economists' expectations. So while we are coming out of a recovery, you want to see that number a little bit higher. And some of that is due to the fact that people have either given up looking for work because the unemployment benefits may be paying some, not all, but some more to stay home than go back to work. And when you look at the jobs data itself, it just it's disappointing because we have over 9.3 million Americans still looking for a job and 7 million job openings. So there's definitely a mismatch here. Why was that number lower than expected? It's headed in the right direction, you're right, but not where you want it to be during a recovery with so many millions of Americans still out of work looking for a job.
Well, and work is so important, not only because to take care of oneself, but also the dignity of work. And Heather, I've been really concerned about this movement to people thinking that they can, you know, like a universal based income, that to be paid for not working at all. I find that a very troubling trend. What's your thoughts on that, Heather?
Right. Well, I think in general, Americans want to work. Those are the principles that we were founded on in terms of hard work. And that's why our country is so successful on a global scale. And we're very competitive on a global basis. The problem is that due to the coronavirus shutdowns, when you're sitting around for so long, as you said, the psychological impacts, the mental, emotional, physical, and health impacts of not working. And then now you snap your fingers and we are all that, well, the majority of us are getting vaccinated. You're going back to the office and it's a really tough transition. It's not like flicking a light switch on and off because you do lose a lot of those job skills and training. If it's not consistent, it makes it that much harder to go back to work. And what can happen, as you're alluding to, is you become dependent on big government and a big welfare system. And that is not the direction, regardless of where you stand on either aisle politically. I don't think that's the direction that people want the country to take or the economy to go.
And with that, with all these payments that are being made to people, we are incurring so much debt. What's your thoughts about the national debt, Heather?
Well, there's a $6 trillion budget proposal now that's being debated. And I do think it made sense, a lot of sense, for example, not just the supplemental unemployment benefits last year, but the initial $2 trillion of COVID spending, the other $1.9 trillion, I think, was debatable that was just passed in the Biden administration because the economic data is showing that things are getting better. Now, I know people still aren't back in the job that they may want to have, but there are those job openings. There is consumer confidence. People are out there spending. So I don't know if it's extra consumer discretionary income from wages going up or is it from the stimulus from the government. But the economic data, if you do own stocks, if you're lucky enough to own the stock market, you're doing pretty well. And so that's why there's a concern from the Republican side that there's too much spending coming out of Washington. And as you know, that can cause inflation. It hasn't in many years coming out of, I remember when I was working in New York during 2008, the first financial recession. And, you know, when we were coming out of that, everyone, people like me were saying there's going to be massive inflation with all of this money printing and everything that the Fed was doing to keep interest rates lower for longer, which we're also doing now. And it never materialized. It never happened. The difference this time is that we do have a good economy. We have all the economic data outside of the jobs report is looking pretty good, which makes it very difficult to justify this spending. And the problem is that where's the limit? There is no limit, it seems like. You know, why a $6 trillion budget proposal? Why not a $10 trillion budget proposal? And I hope that's not the case, because the answer is, as prices go up, when the consumer is going to the grocery store, you're looking to pay the cost of your food bills, or you're looking at costs across the board and the real estate boom. If you're a renter and you want to buy a house, I mean, these are all things. The price of gas at the pump is going up. These are all things that happen in an inflationary environment. And if your wages aren't going up with it, you can't afford your basic necessities and your basic needs.
Well, and under the Trump economy, my understanding is the everyday family had $10,000 more money in their pocket, and that they had actually real wage increases that had not occurred for many, many years. But as we are now looking, we have a headline that my researcher Patty had pulled regarding Costco has talked about the price of so many things that are going up. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that gas is up almost 50% since the Biden administration took place.
Yeah, and you so just drive down the street. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just came out and said that he was going to restrict drilling at the Arctic Refuge. So we've got the Keystone Pipeline stopping that, and no drilling on federal lands, and gas energy is crucial for people to be able to get to work, to pursue their hopes and their dreams. And it's these inflationary pressures that we're feeling, Heather, is not because that there is so much demand because the economy is just so great right now. A lot of it is, I think, because of public policy. And it's beyond me, Heather, why would we have people in place that aren't trying to do the best thing for everyday people instead of increasing the prices for the things that they need to go after their hopes and dreams? What do you see there? You're close to what's happening there. What's your thoughts?
Right. Well, without getting into the weeds, there's something called the modern monetary theory, which essentially, and I think part of the administration, some of their economic advisors and members of their economic council believe that there is no limit to federal spending, because if they're the ones that control the printing press and how much money can be printed, there's an unlimited supply in their eyes. But I think you and I know that's not true. That type of thinking says, let's just keep flooding the system with money. And when you have too many dollars chasing too few goods, you have a massive price increase across the board, which would meaning the current administration, may argue that may be okay temporarily as long as you have wages going up. But what happens is you have a situation called stagflation where wages don't go up. Unemployment remains high. And you know what? Prices go up. That's what happened in the 70s. And that is very scary when that happens. More, I would argue, even more scary than having a recession, because you see the prices, you do have a job, maybe you are employed, prices are skyrocketing, and you can't afford your goods and you have a good job. That's even a more just negative, concerning outlook than going through COVID initially from an economic standpoint. And also, when you're saying, look at the gas pumps, look at prices rising in the grocery store, your poultry, your meat and poultry and consumer goods, that's the rise of Bitcoin. When you look at all these cryptocurrencies, other than the millennial day traders, people are buying them because they're thinking, well, wait a minute, we no longer have the gold standard. We're printing like crazy. Maybe I should own some of this cryptocurrency, this Bitcoin or Dogecoin, because it's an alternative currency. If you have lost faith in the dollar, and I'm not advocating to go buy that, I'm just saying inflation is the reason for the rise of some of these cryptocurrencies, which is absolutely crazy to me. I think, look, the inflation idea, it's not coming. It's already here. It will continue as long as the private sector is competing with the federal government and there's an unlimited amount of money supply and the printing press is in full force.
Oh, my gosh. It's really difficult to compete with the federal government or government. Out here in Colorado, we've seen that they're using taxpayer dollars for vaccine lotteries. And I'm kind of like, is this really the proper role of government? I just can't believe it. Heather, before we go to break, yesterday was the 77th anniversary of the D-Day landings in Normandy, France. And I have another show, America's Veterans Stories, where I, in 2016, went to Normandy with four veterans of D-Day. And I look at the idea of America, and really from our very founding, was that people were willing to sacrifice their lives for something bigger than themselves. And that bigger thing was freedom and to stand against tyranny. And when I look at our generation, that we're thinking that we're going to pass on $27 trillion in debt to the next generation, I just find there's something immoral about that, Heather. What do you think?
I do, too. And, you know, I guess some thinking the proponents or the people who support the unlimited amount of money of money being supplied into the economy, I guess they think, oh, it doesn't impact me. I don't care. Or if you don't have kids or don't plan on having kids and grandchildren. But that is the flawed way of thinking. Like you said, it is our duty as American citizens to care about the future. And I don't know if you have kids. I have a daughter and I don't want to leave that level of debt burden on my grandkids. I wouldn't want to do that either.
I know. And so I think we need to be having this conversation about the character of taking on the significant debt. I'm just thrilled to be talking with Heather Zumarraga. And she is a market expert. She's a nationally known economist, a business commentator. She's written a book, The Man's Guide to Corporate Culture. And we'll continue this conversation when we come back. But before we do that, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of both The Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. They're located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have a wide selection of knives, whether or not you are a collector or a chef or a sportsman. Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go. And Father's Day is right around the corner. Castlegate Knife and Tool is a great place to go to get that great gift for your father. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Heather Zumarraga. Stay tuned.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Really pleased to have on the line with me Heather Zumarraga. And she is a nationally known economist, market expert, business commentator, and author of the book, The Man's Guide to Corporate Culture. And Heather, you mentioned in the previous segment, stagflation. And many people can't remember back to the 70s. A lot of people weren't even alive at that particular
born.
Point in time.
Yeah, but,
born.
Yeah.
And it really is. I was just thinking about it. What that does is you're working hard And it's really because of things outside your control, your buying power goes down. You want to buy a house. You want to have a family. You want your energy to get to and from your job, to, you know, the food, to take care of your family, the clothing. Everything becomes more expensive, but your wages are not going up. Then add into that these same people that these policymakers, these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that are pushing forward these policies that are creating stagflation, they also are increasing taxes. So not only is your buying power going down, but government's taking a bigger cut of your paycheck. And it can lead to frustration, kind of hopelessness in a way. And I don't think that people quite understand it's a double whammy for that hardworking Americans out there.
Right. It is a double whammy. I mean, when you talk about stagflation, it really is important, even if, for example, it was before my time, but just from studying economics and studying history, I understand that rising oil prices, not the exact situation we're in now, but you see prices of other goods and services, as well as price of gas at the pump is going up. They contributed in the 1970s to stagflation, where you have a situation where you have very low, you have low employment, meaning a lot of people are unemployed, wages are stagnant, they're not going up, but yet the prices are going up, so you can't afford it anymore. Like you said, your buying power goes down. And for those that were alive in the 70s, interest rates were nearly 20%. I mean, if you had a mortgage, I'm sure it was a whole lot higher than where interest rates are now. And you might think, well, if you're getting a mortgage, the situation we're in today is great. However, if you're a baby boomer and you were alive in the 70s and you're retiring or near retirement, you can't afford to retire because you can't, your savings, the interest rate on your certificates of deposits, your CDs or bonds of any type of fixed income or conservative investment, you are not going to get a return. So you're forced to either buy equities, which are extremely risky, or keep working. And it is a very scary situation to be in, like you said, while at the same time, the Biden administration is calling for $3 trillion in new tax hikes to pay for all of this spending, which it doesn't even cover. And again, if you're thinking, well, that's just going to be on the corporate fat cats and why should I care? No, it's going to impact you as well, because a lot of corporations are also small businesses. And increasing that business tax rate back to 28%, which is higher than China, by the way, will reduce our competitive, our ability to compete on a global scale, and really hurt small businesses, which are the ones that are actually paying that, because the corporations, as you know, they take advantage of loopholes and deductions. And you look at Amazon, for example, they really don't pay. They're in the single digits when you look at their effective tax rate. About 2 years ago, I think, excuse me, they paid zero in federal taxes, which is crazy. So just increasing the tax rate alone is not going to do it. I'm more in favor, I'd advocate for a minimum tax rate, and you close the loopholes and deductions. That way you don't hurt small business.
Well, and see, that really makes sense, because big business and big government like each other, because, as you mentioned, the big business has accountants and attorneys that can help them figure out how to navigate around the higher tax rates. And so they don't mind advocating for that. And it's the little guy, again, it was the little guy that was considered non-essential during this pandemic, and so many of them were hurt or were closed. Then government comes in and says, well, we're going to give money to different businesses. But once again, some of these little guys didn't know where to apply. And it's the little guy that always gets hurt in this situation. And yet it's the small business that is the engine of the American economy. And so it's extremely frustrating. And the other thing, Heather, is regarding taxes, is when you start to carve out different tax rates, and they're actually trying to sell it through envy. It's like, these people are more successful, these corporations are more successful,
so
you need a cut of that
more
pie. Yeah, and in essence, you should look at people that are successful and say, oh my gosh, if they could do that, then this is America. I have the opportunity to do that as well. And instead of taking a bigger percentage of their pie, because if they earn more, and you have, as you mentioned, I think a flat rate, they're going to pay more. But when it's that you start to take a bigger percentage of their harder work and their bigger success, that's the politics of envy. And once again, we have to ask, what's the character of America? And people that vote for other people to pay more in taxes, if they think it's a good idea, then they should be willing to pay that as well. But it's against human nature, right, Heather?
Yeah. And I think, as you said, small businesses are the backbone or the engine of economic growth in this country. And so we have to be really careful when we're talking about increasing taxes. Small businesses have already, if they were able to survive, and you're a small business owner, if you were able to survive through COVID, I mean, my goodness, haven't you already taken a beating during the coronavirus?
Yes.
You were forced by the government to shut down, right, wrong, good or bad. I mean, that is the situation that they were in if you work with a small business for one or own one. And so you definitely don't want to disincentivize those small businesses that employ many Americans. I mean, what happens is if the government, which we don't want this to happen, becomes the nation's largest employer, that would be crazy. You want a thriving private and public sector. Taxes absolutely matter, even on the individual side. You know, at the end of the day, they're the biggest expense that people have to deal with. And I actually think this has a lot to do with moving around. I'm assuming where you live in Colorado is beautiful, so you don't have a mass exodus. But if you look at people in New York and New Jersey, they're moving to places like Colorado or Florida or Texas to take advantage of lower crime rates but lower taxes. And you're seeing just a lot of migration around the country because people don't want to deal with this. They're sick of the politics. They're sick of the crime, the taxes, and being told what to do.
Well, and Heather, Colorado, you're right. It is a beautiful state. But we actually are trying to out California out here from a public policy standpoint. And we are starting to see people leave Colorado, which I never really thought would happen. But we've had a lot of people that are starting to leave. And so that brings us, we've got just a few minutes left. And that is, I found it kind of interesting, the headline regarding the G7, that they are all talking about Biden is pushing for a global corporate tax. And I think that probably they know that if taxes get too high here in the United States, corporations flee. So it seems like they're trying to prevent that with this global corporate tax. What's your thoughts on that, Heather?
Well, I'm not surprised. If you can't do it unilaterally, you know, you come together and as a group. And so you make it difficult, I guess, for anyone, any person, any organization to stand up and say no and push back on higher taxes. I saw that, the minimum corporate tax deal to go beyond the G7. And I saw those headlines and I was very surprised. If you raise the corporate tax rate back to 28% from 21%, I think it's really going to, and again, regardless of where you stand in politics, it's going to reverse a lot of the good things that were done during the Trump administration economically, because you saw a whole lot of jobs come back from overseas, plants, property, and equipment. And when we lowered that corporate tax rate, it makes America more competitive on a global stage, especially against a country like China, which dominates the news lately. And so we don't want to reverse those policies of people wanting to be and employers wanting to be in the U.S. For work. That's what makes the country so great. And so I think that's very dangerous to go back to those policies of where we can't compete on a global scale. It's not good.
It's not good at all. Heather Zumarraga, this has been such a great conversation. We've got about a minute left. What is the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
Well, I think I work with financial advisors. So I would just say from a money management perspective. If you're in the markets, I think that's wonderful. You stay in the markets. And if you're not and you have cash, even though inflation is coming, you wait for interest rates to head higher or for the stock market to come down and buy.
Okay. And one other quick thing, your book, it looks like a very interesting book. And where can people get that? And just tell us quickly about that.
Right. Yeah. If you are going back to the workplace, which hopefully you are after COVID, new dynamics in the modern workplace, you can get it on Amazon, The Man's Guide to Corporate Culture, Barnes & Noble, or support your local bookstore or small businesses. They have it as well. But The Man's Guide to Corporate Culture will help men and women navigate the new norm in the politically sensitive and politically correct environment that we live in today.
And it is it's quite something to navigate, that's for sure.
Right.
Heather Zumarraga, right. It has been a delight to have you on the show. Really enjoy your perspective, and I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kim. You too. Have a good day.
Okay, thank you. And our quote for today is from Hesiod. And again, we've been talking about employment, the employment numbers. And he lived 750, 650 BC. He said, work is not a shame. Yeah, work is not a shame. Laziness is a shame. And I thought that is just very appropriate. So again, Heather, thank you so much. And my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
Wandering out into this great unknown, and I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, AM 560 and 100.7 FM.